Hassan liked bird watching, so he got in his car and went to the nearby mountains, like he always did. It was early morning, and he was observing the birds in the forest when, for a brief moment, he spotted something unfamiliar in his binoculars. He looked over with his naked eye, but he couldn't really see anything. Perhaps it was too far away. Hassan looked through the binoculars once more, and then shuddered. On the other side of the lens, he could see a strange figure. What appeared to be a clump of moss on human legs, stumbling around clumsily. The upper body was as though its head and arms had been shaved off. Its legs were pale in color, and it was covered in mud. Having gazed upon something he shouldn't have, Hassan shivered. But then he noticed something that made him run and never return to the mountain again. That strange thing in the distance. It was walking slowly, with an unsteady gait. But there was no doubt that it was heading right for him. Hey guys, this is your host Tara A. Devlin, and welcome to another terrifying episode of Koobana, true Japanese scary stories from around the internet. Before we get started this week, I have a small announcement I'd like to make. I've been hard at work on the second volume of the Koobana book series, and it's almost ready for release. This volume features over 90 urban legends and other scary stories, many of which you'll only find in this book. You can visit koobana.net for more details about its release. Now, this week we're doing an Inaka special. Inaka means the countryside, so I've picked a few of my favourite stories this week that take place way out in the middle of nowhere. The Inaka has a special place in my heart, because that's where I lived for 10 years. Way out in the middle of nowhere. Nothing but rice fields as far as the eye can see, and the nearest convenience store was a 15-minute bike ride away. Considering that in most places the nearest convenience store is usually only a few hundred meters away, this was quite far. But there's a certain atmosphere out in the countryside. Like, time moves slower there. Things are older, more mysterious. There's that sense of loneliness when you're the only person around for miles, and you never really know what could be hiding behind the rice or deep in the mountains. So one of the schools I worked at in Japan was very tiny. There was only one class per grade, and it was located way out in the middle of nowhere. It was surrounded by mountains and forests, and it sat right at the bottom of quite a big hill. I often went exploring up there during my free time, and one time I was with a few of the kids when they showed me a grave they'd found. They claimed it was the grave of a samurai, which, considering how old and in the middle of nowhere the place was, it wasn't really entirely out of the question. But it was still both fascinating and creepy regardless. We also found this building way out in the middle of the mountain somewhere that looked like it had been abandoned very suddenly and then not touched again for another 10 or 20 years. Calendars were still on the wall. Old binders and things were scattered around the place. But the creepiest part of it all was the basement. There was a large concrete section that was full of water. And while there was a door at the end of it, the water was too high to ever really hope to open it. I can't say I fancied the idea of swimming through murky basement water to reach it in the first place. But still, the mystery of what was behind that door sticks with me to this day. So, my question to you this week is, what strange experiences have you had out in the countryside? Let me know because I'm surely not the only one to have ever stumbled across a strange abandoned building hidden up in the mountains. Which actually brings us to our first story this week. This story is about a boy who returns to his father's childhood home for the Obon holidays. While there, he's playing with his older cousins, and they also stumble across a strange abandoned building. But what's hiding inside? Find out in Cursed Second Hideout. This story happened at my father's family home in the countryside when I was a kid. If you want to put it politely, you could say my father's childhood home is surrounded by the beauty of nature. Another way to put it is that it's in the middle of absolutely nowhere. There are snakes, and although I've never seen them, bears as well. And when I go there for the summer holidays, it really teaches me the many meanings of the word nature. This particular story happened when I was in the third grade of elementary school. Our family went to stay with my grandparents for a week, for Obon. I'd play with my two older cousins, the older brother, I'll call him A, and the younger brother, B, from morning until night. The closer we got to returning home to the city, the darker I'd get from all the sun tanning I did. Although you would think I would have played more than enough by then, it just wasn't enough. So the day before we were to go back home, I asked A and B, "Do you want to go someplace even more fun?" At A's suggestion, we decided to go to the second hideout. This second hideout was a place just as you enter the mountains, what seemed to be the remains of a building built by a religious group. The land was surrounded by wire fencing, but the entrance only had a loose chain, so it was easy for children to get inside. With nobody there anymore, it had gone to ruin. The wire fencing was falling apart, and the ground was covered in weeds. There was a parking lot and an asphalt road leading out, but there were so many fallen leaves you could barely see the ground. It was a one-story concrete building. White paint was peeling off the walls, and all the doors and windows were closed with storm shutters. Each one was padlocked. A and his brother got in via the back, where a fallen tree had broken through a sliding door. I followed them in, and the first thing I saw was something like a small assembly room. There was a curved skylight, so the entire room was bright. There was a long, flat altar, and an object of worship shaped like male private parts. Being stupid kids, we laughed at it. We swung it around, threw it at each other, tossed it around like a rock, all sorts of stupid things. We searched the building and played for a while, but the sun was setting and it was getting dark, so we decided to go back. Just like how we entered, A went out first, but as he did, he suddenly screamed, "Look down! Whatever you do, don't look up!" "Huh?" I thought. But I continued to look at his feet as we tried to leave the grounds. And along the way, we passed by someone. If I were to describe him in a single word, it would be blue. I only saw his feet, but they were those of an old person, but an unnatural shade of blue. I think it was like those old 500 yen notes, or more recently like the same shade as Natsume Soseki on the 1000 yen notes. They stood out as something like that. I got scared, thinking that someone like that was standing so close to us, so I did my best to stick to A and B as we walked. A kept repeating, "Nani Nani San, please help us," over and over, like a chant. B and myself were half crying, clinging to the elder A, just wishing we could get out of there. We hurried along, and finally we reached the exit facing the asphalt road. I wanted to run, thinking we were finally free. But as I started to lift my head once again, A screamed, "There's two of them! Keep your head down!" I was surprised that A noticed I'd looked up without even turning around, but I'd never heard him speak like that before, so I quickly looked back down towards the ground. After walking a little while longer, I could hear the sound of the wire fence swaying, and what appeared to be A making his way through the gap. His feet were shaking like crazy. After he exited, he held out his hand to us, but it was shaking. We soon realized why. There really was another one there. I only glimpsed at the feet, but unlike the old guy before, this was a young woman. There was a tear in her ankle, running a few centimeters upwards, and the flesh behind it was blue as well. A was still saying whatever prayer it was that he was chanting. Every now and then his voice got shrill, and it was probably extremely difficult for him, but having brought us younger kids there, it felt like he was doing his best for us. Both myself and B clung to A, and holding hands we could do nothing but follow behind him. When we reached the mountain trail, A was still repeating his prayer, and every now and then he'd say to us, "There should be another of them. Keep looking down." As we got close to the end of the trail, I felt a sense of security, so I looked ahead, and there was nobody standing in front of us. I was relieved. But of course, it wasn't over yet. The last person was standing about 4 meters above the trail. She was kind of blurry, floating there, with a hairstyle and kimono that you don't see these days. She was blue and half smiling as she stared at us. I was so scared I clung to A, and he soon realized what I'd seen, so he helped carry me along. As the sun disappeared, we finally reached our grandparents' house. Our worried grandfather came to greet us, asking whether I'd been injured. A explained what he saw, and that he'd properly prayed as we came back. I remember the family going into an uproar. My grandfather and father ran about in a hurry, taking an offering off somewhere, and then my uncle, who came later, also went off after them. My grandmother, mother, and aunt all remained in the house. Bawling, our grandmother wouldn't let go of A. B and I had no idea what was going on. However, later that night, A broke out into a fever, and he started crying that he might die. Our grandmother came and took him into another room to sleep. The next morning, we all went up to a gravesite slightly up the mountainside to pray. A also came, his father carrying him on his back as his fever came down. I didn't know whose grave it was, but it was old. Quite a large stone made up the base. Perhaps it was our family's patron god, but seeing as there was no shrine, it was just a regular grave, I had no idea. I saw A again at my grandfather's funeral, after we hadn't seen each other for quite some time, and we spoke about what happened that time. If I'd been done in by those guys, I would have gone crazy and killed you. I did everything I could not to succumb to it. You're from a branch of the family, so you can't be possessed. But if B had seen them, it would have been a different story, he said. Wait, our family is cursed? I wondered, finding it all just a little bit terrifying. So, if you've never heard of Obon before, it's a holiday that lasts for 3 days, where people honor the spirits of their ancestors. It's a time where the spirits of the dead are said to return to the land of the living, so a lot of ghost stories are set during this time. Our next story is no different. This one is about a young man whose village has a strange and dangerous ritual once someone passes away. Find out what happens in The Mysterious Countryside Ritual. I heard this story when I returned home to the countryside the other day. It was kinda shocking, so please let me write it all down. There's a custom in our village that after visiting someone's grave, we return to the main family house on foot, carrying a lantern. If that were the only thing, it would be quite normal, but there are various conditions that go along with it. Number one, you cannot extinguish the lantern. If the flame goes out, you must immediately return to the grave and relight it. Number two, you must not run. Number three, the youngest person must carry the lantern. However, in the case of those like babies who cannot carry the lantern by themselves, it will go to the next oldest. Number four, under no circumstances must you look at the shrine. The shrine referenced in the fourth point refers to one found on the way to the main house from the gravesite. The road is mostly nothing but rice fields. However, there's an isolated area that looks like an artificial forest where you can see a small stone-built shrine. So what it's saying is that you can't look in the direction of that shrine. When I was a child, I once experienced carrying the lantern, and my parents strictly ordered me to follow these rules. This lantern helps your ancestor move from the grave to the altar in our house, so it must not go out along the way, I was told. I was just a child, so I was like, how strange. But I performed my duty. Then I remembered my mother covering my eyes as we approached the area with the shrine. I just thought she was playing around, so I innocently giggled and joked with her. Things continued this way until we passed the shrine, and after my mother took her hand away, we continued walking until we reached the house. The flame was transferred to a candle on the altar, and that was the end of the ceremony. I didn't think much about the custom at the time, but after returning home for the first time in a while this year, I decided to ask my grandmother about it. Oh yeah, we never properly told you about it, did we? When I heard the true meaning behind the rules of carrying the lantern, I was honestly shocked. Number one, you cannot extinguish the lantern. If the flame goes out, you must immediately return to the grave and relight it. Like I heard in the past, the lantern acted as an object to guide our ancestor to the house. If the flame went out, they wouldn't be able to follow along. Number two, you must not run. Because if you run, it's easier for it to find you. Number three, the youngest person there must carry the lantern. It targets the weak, so this position places them where their ancestor can best protect them. In short, the person holding the lantern is the one closest to their ancestor's protection. Number four, under no circumstances must you look at the shrine. If you accidentally, directly look at it, then your ancestor can no longer provide you with protection. While my grandmother was explaining things, the word it popped up several times. I had no idea what she meant. "What do you mean by it?" I asked her. "It's it. It's the thing in the shrine." It was something that lived in the shrine, located in the forest in the rice fields. Supposedly, it looked kind of like a monkey with long legs, and had been there for quite some time. Usually, it was peaceful. However, during the Obon season, it would turn into something dangerous. Apparently, it did have a name, but it was forbidden to speak it. "You're better off not knowing," my grandmother said, and refused to tell me. "They don't tell the children about it because then they'll become curious, and they might accidentally see it." Now that I think about it, that time when my mother covered my eyes was likely because of that very reason. I'm thankful to her for that now. My grandmother went on and told me about a time the custom, or rather the ritual, failed. There was a time where the lantern went out on the way home, and the bearer saw it, causing the ritual to fail. When that happens, someone in the family will invariably meet with an inexplicable accident, or even die by the time of the next Obon. At this point, I started to find the whole thing rather suspicious, but then my grandmother said, "You know F died last year, yes? He was killed by it." I got goosebumps all of a sudden. At the end of last year, my cousin F-kun died in a car accident. We used to play together a lot as children, so I was heartbroken. According to what my mother told me, he was driving straight along a nice stretch of road when suddenly he turned the steering wheel and drove into a river, where he later died. Even now, we don't know why he suddenly turned the wheel. The reason why I returned home after so long was because I wanted to light some incense for him. So, last summer failed, the person carrying the lantern, I asked. "Last year, Yu-chan was the bearer. Seems like he saw it. He was terribly frightened. There was a big panic after, and they tried to have him purified. But apparently, it was no good. In the past, I took part without really thinking anything about it at all. But coming to know the real meaning behind the ritual, I was terrified. This time, the ritual had already taken place before I arrived, so I just went to visit the grave. I can't do anything but worry about whether this year's ritual was a success or not. Next year, however, I'd like to take part and carefully watch over it." Our last story for this week features a young man whose grandmother has just died, leaving her house out in the countryside empty. He invites some of his friends to stay for the holidays, but they soon find out the house is not quite as empty as they expected. Who, or what, is in there with them? Find out in Our Terrifying Experience in the Abandoned House. This happened during the summer of last year. My close friend's grandmother died, leaving her house in the countryside empty, so he invited three of us, A, the friend who invited us, myself, and B, to stay at her place for 2 nights as a kind of holiday house. This house was separated from the main manor. When A's family went to stay for Buddhist services and such, they would always stay in the main manor, while the other house was only ever used for guests. So, because the main manor was kept in the same state as when A's grandmother was alive, it was decided we'd stay in the detached house instead. It had a small kitchen, bathroom, and toilet. In addition to that, there were also two Japanese-style rooms. It was more than enough for three guys, and it wouldn't cost anything, so we had absolutely no complaints. It was about an hour drive from Tokyo, along the coastline, right in front of the beach. We immediately ran for the water like idiots. That night, we started drinking and had a barbecue, and while chatting about trivial matters, we fell asleep. During the night, I woke up, needing to pee. I shone my miniature torch on A and B, who were snoring, and made my way to the toilet. The toilet was at the other end of the hall from the Japanese-style room. When I looked, there was a light shining out from the frosted glass door of the toilet. I figured someone had gotten up to use it and then forgotten to turn the light off, so I turned the hallway light on and went towards it. Without any suspicions at all, I turned the doorknob. It was locked and wouldn't open. I rattled the doorknob several times, but it refused to open. I was half asleep, so I knocked and asked, "Is anyone in there?" But there was no response. I just wanted to pee and get back to bed already, so I knocked again, complaining that whoever was in there needed to get out. Then something moved behind the frosted glass. "Finally," I thought. But then suddenly my mind cleared, and I realized both my friends were asleep in the other room. No one was in the toilet. "Oh, if I stay here, I'm gonna see something I shouldn't," I thought. I hurried back to the room, and without turning the lights on, I shook the other two awake. I quickly told them everything, but they were still half asleep, so they were just like, "Ah, a scary story, huh? Whatever. You woke me up for that?" What was this? Even though I was trembling with fear, they were acting like it was nothing. But the fact that I was no longer the only one awake was still somewhat of a relief. Just as A was getting up to turn on the lights, complaining the whole time, there was a sudden bang from the hallway. The three of us froze. We fell silent. From the hallway, we could hear the sound of a doorknob being turned. The sliding door to the room had been left open, and in the light coming in from the hallway, you could clearly see how terrified the three of us were. Then B said, "I'll go and have a look. It's probably just some hobo." And holding his pillow, went to exit the room. There was nothing else we could do, so also holding our pillows, myself and A followed him to the hallway. We could still hear the rattling doorknob. In the distance, we could also hear the roar of the waves. At the end of the hallway, light was definitely shining behind the toilet door. The knob was moving. Suddenly, with incredible speed, B ran screaming towards the toilet. It scared the crap out of me. While the knob was still rattling, he screamed, "Cut that shit out! Get out here now!" I was dumbfounded, but then suddenly, the toilet light turned off. Surprised, B stopped moving. A had turned off the toilet light. We continued standing there like that. B's hand was still on the toilet doorknob. "Hmm?" he said, and opened the door. "Hey, it's open." Light from the hallway shone in. There was no one in the toilet. There was nothing in there but the toilet itself. The window was slightly ajar, but there were bars on it, so no one would be able to fit through it. Waves crashed, and bugs chirped. After a period of silence, A was like, we're just half asleep. Plus we were drinking. B and I agreed, and we laughed it off. A returned to the room, and B handed me his pillow, saying he was going to pee first, and went into the toilet. I needed to go as well, so I waited in the hallway. But then suddenly, all the lights turned off. B in the toilet and A in the bedroom both screamed in terror. Of course, I did the same.
Die for me.
A low, fragile voice, neither male nor female, reverberated throughout the entire dark house. We panicked. I think B was probably the most scared. We quickly turned the lights back on, but it was no good. The three of us were crying. We wanted to leave immediately, but we'd been drinking, so we couldn't drive. But we didn't want to be in that room either. The main manor was no good. With nowhere else to go, we waited on the beach until morning, and when the sun came up, we returned to the room. Whether it was because we'd calmed down or the lack of sleep or whatnot, but we were unusually calm. We searched the toilet from top to bottom, but there was nothing strange there. When we asked A about it, he said he'd never heard anything strange about it either. In the end, we had no idea what happened, but we never wanted to go back there again. So I hope you guys enjoyed this week's episode. If there are any other themes or stories you'd like to see in future episodes, you can let me know at koabana.net/podcast. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please consider leaving a review for it on iTunes. It's super easy. And you can find the link for it at koabana.net/podcast. Thanks, guys, and we'll see you again next week for even more Koabana, true Japanese scary stories from around the internet. Want even more scary stories? Head over to koabana.net for new translations every Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday. You can also join our Patreon for exclusive stories you won't find anywhere else. Head over to koabana.net now.